Good morning, everybody. Good evening, rather, everybody. Yeah. Welcome to this open floor hearing. I am David Cliff, and I'm a member of the panel appointed by the Secretary of State as the examining authority to examine the nationally significant infrastructure project. Before I carry on, can I just make sure that everybody who wants to sit down can sit down? There's a few spare seats over on my right-hand side, so if everybody can get a seat, if there are seats available, there's a couple to my left as well. Thank you. I just want to introduce the other panel members. To my left, Roger Catchpole. To my right, David Prentice, who's the lead member of the panel. And on my far right, Guy Rigby. Now, could everybody hear what I'm saying? Thank you. Our task is to examine the application and prepare a report with a recommendation to the Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. The project is an offshore wind farm and the application has been made by Ørsted Hornsea Project 3 UK Limited, which I shall refer to in the hearing as the applicant. You can find information about the application and documents produced for this examination on the Planning Inspectorate National Infrastructure Planning website, and this includes pages that set out the examination timetable, application documents and all the representations received to date. And I'm sure many of you are already familiar with that. Moving to the procedure for the hearing, just some housekeeping in terms of the venue today. Toilets are available on through the doors on my left hand side. The fire exit is in the far corner of the room over there, and there is a hearing loop if anybody requires that this evening. And can I ask you to turn mobile phones and any other electrical devices to silent, please? In terms of social networking, if anyone intends to use social media or to report, film or record during the hearing, you are free to do so, but please do so responsibly and with proper consideration for other parties. This must not be misused or be disruptive, and no individually recorded items may be relied on as evidence by any party or used in submissions. There is an agenda for tonight's hearing that's been sent out to registered interested parties, and copies, I think, are also available this evening. Although, as this is an open floor hearing, it's not a very detailed agenda, because the purpose of this hearing is for you to provide representations to us, the panel. All interested parties who wish to make all representations have been invited to attend and to participate in this hearing if they wish, and participation is subject to our powers to control the hearing. The subject matter for the hearing is not set by the agenda. Your comments should be based on the representations you have already made in writing. Subject to that, you can talk about any matter arising from the application that is important and relevant to the decision to be taken on the application. If you bring up matters that are not important or relevant, we can interject briefly to explain this and may ask you to move on with your representations. It will assist also in making sure that everyone is heard tonight that where a previous speaker covers points that you were going to make, that you simply indicate your agreement with those points rather than simply repeating them. We will have a record of all the points made and they will not gain any greater weight from being repeated. So obviously if you can listen out to what's already been said, there's no need to repeat points that have already been made this evening. In terms of how long the hearing will last, this is based upon really the people who want to be heard tonight, so there's no set finish time. And we intend to hear first from anyone who has written in and requested to be heard, then from other interested parties who have attended and requested to be heard on the day. There'll also be an opportunity for the applicant to speak towards the end of the hearing. Once all requested parties have spoken and no one else is waiting to be heard, I will announce that we intend to close the hearing. Now, all hearings associated with national infrastructure examinations are recorded. The recordings are uploaded to the National Infrastructure website documents page. And this step is taken so that any member of the public who is interested in the application and the examination can find out what has happened, whether or not they are able to attend the hearing. Now, if you take part in the hearing tonight, giving your representations, it's important you understand that your comments will be recorded and that the recording will be published and retained, usually for a period of 5 years from the Secretary of State's decision. The Planning Inspectorate is subject to general data protection regulations. Now, it's very unlikely that the panel will ask you to put sensitive personal information into the public domain. Indeed, we would encourage you not to do so. However, if you feel it's necessary for you to refer to sensitive personal information, we would encourage you to speak to our case officer in the first instance. And I'll point him out in a few moments. We would then explore with you whether the information could be provided in a written format, which might be redacted before being published. Now, if you're intending to speak, there are two options. There's some microphones at the desks facing me, which you are free to use. And I understand there's also a roving microphone as well, which you can use if you so wish. Please give your name before you say anything, as this makes it easier for anyone to listen to the recording. Now, turning to the examination timetable, should also say, sets a deadline on Monday, the 1st of April 2019, for written submissions of oral cases to be submitted to the panel. So that's a written summary of what your representations are this evening, if you wish to submit those. Turning to introductions, I briefly mentioned the case officer tonight. I'd like to introduce KJ Johansson from the Planning Inspectorate. If you'd like to put your hand up, KJ. And if you have any queries about administrational matters regarding examination, then he is the person you need to speak to outside of this hearing, or if you have any procedural queries you want to raise with him tonight. And he's also got, importantly, the roving microphone. Now, if I can confirm, firstly, who's expecting to speak tonight. Now, I've got a list of people who have written in advance who have said they wish to speak, and I'm aware that there's more people here who may wish to speak who are not on this list. But firstly, I'll just go through the list that I've got, and then I'll move on to ask anybody else who may wish to speak. The first person on my list is Councillor Graham Everett. And do you wish to speak this evening?
Yeah.
And a representative from Causton Parish Council, Brian, and forgive me if I mispronounce your surname, but Brian School. Okay. Now, on my list, I've also got a Mr. Monk. Is Mr. Monk in attendance? Do you wish to speak tonight, sir? Okay, and can I just check, just because I've got my notes in front of me here, and you're a member of Causton Parish Council. Do you wish to speak on behalf of Causton Parish Council?
I'm the Parish Council Working Group. I'm not an elected councillor.
Right, you're on the working group.
So I'm sort of halfway between a resident and a parish council.
Okay, but will your views tonight, just to be absolutely sure, will your views be representative of the parish council or your individual views?
Be the parish council.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. And Mr. Barnett from Corputzi and Saxthorpe Parish Council. And you wish to speak?
I do.
And next on my list, I've got Councillor Derek Alders from Milbarton Parish Council. And do you wish to speak?
Not this evening, thank you.
Okay. Andrew Parle in attendance. I see a hand up.
Yeah.
Do you wish to speak, sir?
Yes, please.
Can I just check, because it's not on my list. Are you an interested party, a registered interested party? Okay, so you're not a registered interested party. The reason I ask is that I'm going to get the interested parties to speak first, and then I'll move on to those people who are not interested parties. And a Mr. Ray Pearce.
Yes, please, interested parties.
And I've also got Diana Pearce on my list.
She's not here.
Okay. Okay, those are the people on my list. I expect there's other people who want to speak as well. If I could first start by all the people who are registered interest parties, if you could put your hand up if you wish to speak this evening. Okay, if you keep your hands up, and I'll move on round from my left-hand side. I think I can see a hand up over there. Okay, if everyone keep your hands up, yes, sir.
I'm Greg Peck, a county councillor for Reefham Division, which includes Causton and Saul and the surrounding villages.
Okay, looking around for further hands.
Imogen Watson, Corbesdene Saxthorpe Parish Council.
Could you just repeat your surname, please?
Waterson,
thank you. Okay, there's a gentleman there.
Yeah, Clive Searson, the old railway gatehouse.
Thank you.
Judy Holland, resident Reefham.
Susan Mather, Alton Parish Council.
I didn't quite catch your surname. Can you just repeat that, please?
Susan Mather, M-A-T-H-E-R.
Thank you, from Alton Parish Council.
Nicola Bannum, Oak House High Street, Causton resident.
Thank you. Any more interested parties? No more interested parties. Okay, if I can now move on to people who aren't registered as interested parties. If you could put your hands up if you wish to speak, please.
It's Councillor Stefan Akkerone, representing Melton Constable Division.
Thank you.
Amelia Whiting, a resident.
Thank you.
Polly Bockis, Causton resident.
Graham Whiteley, Causton High Street resident.
Emily Whiteley, Causton High Street resident.
Dota Williams, and I live in Chapel Street, Causton.
Can you just repeat your first name, please? Sorry.
Dota, D-O-T-A.
Thank you. Is that Williams? Okay. Anybody else who wishes to speak?
Guy Pitcher, Causton resident.
Anybody else? Okay, thank you. Now, in common with other open floor hearings, we've set a speaking limit of approximately 5 minutes for speakers today. So if you could bear that in mind, please. This will ensure that the time can be evenly divided out between speakers. And can I also ask, as I said that towards the end of the hearing, we'll ask for the applicant to respond briefly to points made. Is there anybody from the applicant who would like to put their name forward now who's going to speak later, or if it's more than one?
So Andrew Guyton, Consents Manager.
Sarah Dralaka, Onshore Consents Manager.
Claire Broderick, Solicitor at Pinsent Masons for the applicant.
Paul Zenner from Create Consulting.
Thank you. So that's the list of speakers this evening. Now, before we move on to the actual representations, does anybody have any procedural questions about the hearing? Okay, turning to the list of speakers, if I can start, please, with Councillor Graham Everett.
Thank you, sir. Councillor Graham Everett, Broughton District Council elected member for Reefham Ward. And my speaking has become a little bit easier tonight because I was going to cover for Councillor Greg Peck, as he wasn't sure if he could make tonight. As he is here, I'll allow some of the speaking I was going to say to refer to him and to Mr Pearce because they can cover better detail. We'd just like to focus on two key issues, basically. There's a proposed compound on the B1145 Causton Road on the bend by Saul. Just slightly concerned on the highway's access to there. Had a good look at the site and feel concerned about how the vehicles would actually access that site. So I'd like some reassurances how they would do that. That's just slightly north where Vatton falls, should their application receive consent, where they will be throwing traffic light management on that road. So I'd like some reassurance there will be no big vehicles accessing from very close to that bend onto there. And just separately, appreciate if this application does receive consent, that will be after all the gone through the statutory bodies, etc., etc. That will be the end of the application. Would like some reassurance that when this is done and dusted and continues, the applicant is required to have local detailed consent and discussions with elected bodies, i.e. Norfolk County Council, Broughton District Council, the town and parish councils and the elected members when this goes forward, subject to you granting consent. So though it's the end, perhaps as regards to the planning inspector concerned, they are required then when it comes to the detail of construction to ensure we are fully engaged to work with them. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to be absolutely clear, could you just describe again the location of the particular compound that you were concerned about?
It's Councillor Graham Everett, Broughton District Council, Reefham Ward. On the B1145, near the cable crossover point, it's on the Causton Road, where the turning off is to Saul. They're now proposing a storage compound there, which is very close to where the cable comes across there. Just south of that is where Vatton Falls cables would cross. So just reassure us how the vehicles on that compound would actually access that. It's on the bend by the Saul turning B1145.
Thank you. And as I said, there'll be an opportunity at the end for the applicant to respond to briefly to reports that have been made, and they may respond subsequently in writing as well, but I'm not going to be going back to the applicant after each speaker, but they will, I'm sure, have noted your comments, as have the examining panel. And moving on to Mr. School, please. Right, okay. Mr. Monk.
Thank you. I just want to make a couple of points. We just received version 5 of Orsted's traffic plan for Causton by email on Sunday afternoon, so we've not had a chance really to go through that. We give some detailed responses at deadline 10 once we've seen the replies to the examiner's written questions on traffic in Causton and the Norfolk County Council final position. We've got no sense that residents' feedback has been taken seriously. We're concerned that our district and county councillor, Councillor Peck, was excluded from consultations with the applicant and Norfolk County Council. And we don't support the plan, and we consider the plan to be fundamentally flawed. We've had no response from the applicant to our proposals that we put forward at deadline 7 for an alternative route, which we suggested could be developed jointly by Alstead and Vattenfall and would avoid Corston altogether. And other alternative possibilities seem to be dismissed by things like concerns over hedgerows and trees. Well, we put our residents' safety and quality of life ahead of trees and hedgerows, and we ask you, the examiners, to do the same and take account of the many Corston residents who've come to speak tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. And version 5, we will not have received that yet. I presume that's probably going to come in for the next deadline. Obviously, the examination it closes on the 2nd of April, but there are further opportunities in the timetable for you to respond. So I think you probably are already aware, but you will have an opportunity to respond when you've obviously considered that in further detail. If there's no further comments you want to make on that this evening, and obviously it's important for the panel to get such representations from anybody on, as this in particular is an evolving matter where obviously there's revised iterations of schemes being put forward.
Deadline 10.
Right, thank you. Okay, thank you for that. Mr. School, did you have anything else to add to that? Okay, thank you. And turning now to Mr. Barnett, please.
I'm a resident of Corpus Dean Saxthorpe. I'm a member of Corpus Dean Saxthorpe Parish Council. And I'm also a professor at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And I mention that only because the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, as some of you will know, is one of three leading public health research universities in the world. So I speak from that position as well. I have three questions, and I have a written text which I can share with you and will do afterwards. Each of my questions is subject to a preamble which I shall present to you as briefly as I can before I pose the question, so as to present each question in its clear context. And I hope you will tolerate a little technicality, because there are many technicalities involved in a project such as this. I'd first of all like to say that I don't object, and we don't object, to the use of wind-powered energy generation. It's a very desirable thing. I do want to draw the examiner's attention to several issues to do with the public health impact of the construction process, its impact upon people and communities living along the route of the B1149 and other areas impacted by the project. And I wish to draw the examiner's attention to some technical issues which are well known, which are associated with costing methods applied to projects such as this. I approach the examiners in the spirit of exploring and ensuring proper consideration of public health risks and costs to well-being generated by this national infrastructure project. So I begin, first of all, by making a few comments about the notion of cost. This will be familiar to you, I'm sure. But I'll repeat it. All projects, national or local, have costs. And these fall into three broad groups. Costs which you can translate into money very easily. Costs which are not directly financial, but which may be more or less satisfactorily translated into money costs. And then the third type of cost, costs which are not easily translatable to money terms, for example, health effects, reduction in life expectancy, illness, all of these things associated with particulate matter, for example, generated by a project related to additional traffic in the construction process. Such effects, such costs, may be very long-term in their consequences, and they're all too easily ignored, although they are often very serious given their long-term effects on human health and welfare. Because they're difficult to quantify, they're often either represented by inadequate proxy indicators or ignored entirely. And they often ignore the way in which costs to communities, to individuals, are externalised onto the population, but not taken into account in the costing of the project. Because those costs are outside the spatial area of the project and outside its immediate time duration, which leads me to my question, to which that is the introduction. So here's the question. How far has costing of this national infrastructure project taken account of direct and indirect health, welfare, and road safety costs to the local communities over the medium and long term? That's my first question. Now I come to my second question, and I will again present what I hope is a helpful preamble. There are three preceding points in this preamble. The medium and long-term effects of additional particulate emissions, particularly but not exclusively of fine particulate matter, which is known as PM2.5, associated with additional traffic moving along or waiting and holding areas before moving along the B1149 from vehicle waiting areas in Alton and or Cawston. These are considerable costs to health. These costs to health are broader than PM2.5 emissions. They include many other emissions. And the examiners may want to take account of, among others, the report prepared for DEFRA by Ricardo Energy and Environment in 2018 and submitted very recently in February 2019. I cite that report in the written text which I will provide for you. The second point. The effects of this project will be, among other things, on ambulance response times for people living in this area and in the catchment area more generally in North Norfolk. Recent data suggest that this area has some of the poorest response times in England and Wales. The examiners will know that response times can be measured in several ways, notably from receipt of call to arrival of an ambulance crew on site, and from receipt of call to arrival of a patient at an appropriate hospital. In most cases, this means the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. Current median time for arrival of crews at the patient in the NR11 area is 18.37 minutes. This is, of course, not the time from receipt of call until arrival of the ambulance at Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. Neither is it the mean time. I am sure you will know the difference between a mean, a median, and a mode. That is the median time. Third point.
And if I could just, the 5 minutes is up.
Well, so I'm afraid I have a great deal to tell you, and I won't be very long. I have one other small question.
I understand. Yeah,
okay, may I continue?
Thank you. Yes, you can.
I crave your indulgence. Thank you. I wrote to Miss Emily Wolfenden of Orsted, and I asked her about traffic movements. She told me that there will be expected at peak 232 two-way movements of light vehicles and 162 two-way movements of HGVs on a daily basis at peak. Now, I don't know what peak means. It's not explained. But I make that a total of 788 additional single movements over an unspecified peak and allowing for 8 hours per working day. That suggests 1.625 additional movements associated with this project per minute of the working day, Against that background that I've just provided, I pose the second question I would like you to consider and I would like Orsted to answer. What effects will project-related additional traffic movements along the B1149 have on the 100-metre particulate emission plumes on each side of the carriageway during the project's life and over the following 30 years, taking account of particulate susceptibility of the ageing population characteristic of the area, the child population in the area, and concerning the model outputs provided in the Ricardo Energy and Environment report cited above, what will be the effects of this additional traffic on ambulance response times and on people's health? I've truncated my question there because I wish to save you time.
Thank you.
My final point is the following. Modelling of project impacts which is very technical, usually involves specification of variables assumed by modellers to be significant for their model. Choices of significant variables may exclude factors which are significant to local communities, and these model variables are often represented by proxy indicators. I'm sure you as examiners are familiar with these techniques. My question is, will the examiners obtain a complete list of all models used in planning this project, all variables considered in these models, all proxy indicators, and share these together with the detailed formulae deployed within those models with the potentially affected communities so they may provide suggestions for inputs which are of concern to them but which may have been omitted by modellers in planning this project and estimating the costs? Thank you, gentlemen, for your indulgence.
Thank you. And as I said before, you can provide a written version of your comments by the 1st of April.
I can give it to you now, sir.
If you could send it in, just so we can...
That's fine.
If you could send it in via the project email address.
Which is what?
The KJ. KJ will give you that.
Oh, right, OK. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that submission. Next on my list is Mr. Pahl, please.
Thank you. So, really quite interested party, as it turns out. But I'm a resident on High Street, Causton. My front doorstep is about 3 feet away from the B1145. Most people know, a lot of the houses down that road are over 200 years old and very tight to the road, and we cannot... believe you're going to send that many vehicles past our front doors. We already experience vibration and noise pollution in that area. I'm not sure how the applicant went about choosing out who took part in the vibration testing, but certainly nobody knocked on my door or asked if I'd like to take part, which I would have done. And I can absolutely guarantee that we do feel shuddering through our house already before this project starts and the following projects. So really what I'm looking to do is to lessen that traffic movement, maybe by a loop system whereby at least one way of the traffic doesn't go through the village. Obviously, I'd hope for not to go past at all, but if we could just reduce that in some way, that would be great. On top of that also, I believe the new plan is that maybe one way of the traffic is going to go through Chapel Street in Causton. And again, any resident in Causton will know full well that is already a chaotic road with the traffic from the winery, and quite how they expect to have 60 HGVs plus the support vehicles to be doing that one way is really beggars belief, I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you for that representation. Mr. Pierce, now, please.
Good evening, everybody, ladies and gentlemen. My response has some written reference, which I'll include with my written submission to this oral representation. My name is Ray Pierce. I live within 100 metres of the proposed crossing point with Norfolk Vanguard and Boreas and the Hornsey 3 project. At the previous open hearing, certain questions were posed on the applicant regarding high voltage AC and DC, and they responded, which I'd like to expand upon. This isn't a repeat, it is actually to say about what they've actually stated. They were posed a question: please provide further information on any electrical effects that would result from a scenario with high voltage AC crossing high voltage DC cables. Their response, this was in response to our assertion that the EMS from high voltage AC and DC cables will indeed interact with each other. The reply referenced a report authored by National Grid and commissioned by both the applicant and Norfolk Vanguard, and I'll quote, "In this report, it is stated that high voltage DC and high voltage AC fields do not interact with one another. We contest the above statement as being false, in that this document is from the National Grid website, which clearly states total field and AC field. How do AC and DC fields relate to each other? The document clearly demonstrates how AC and DC fields interact, making the applicant's statement and document at best misleading, at worst a deliberate false statement. The AC field is superimposed on the DC static field. In the UK, the static field is on average 50 microteslas. From their figures, we could expect another 60 microteslas from the high voltage DC cables from Norfolk Vanguard and Boreas. And the AC cables, if they chose to use AC, would peak at a further 50 microteslas. That makes for a potential maximum B field strength of 160 microteslas, which would be the peak of the AC field superimposed on the static field as per this document, which according to research is significant. This information is available to the public and therefore was available to the applicant. We assert that there is a possibility of damage to public health with attachment 2, which tells, again, it's from the National Grid website, which talks about free radicals and how the mechanism can affect positive ions in a biological system. We support that with information we have provided in front of the applicant before, which is a research carried out by Andrew Goldsworthy, an eminent professor, and it's entitled The Biological Effects of Weak Electromagnetic Fields. The author concludes that there is undeniable experimental proof that weak EMFs can remove bound calcium ions, in this case radicals, from cell membranes. The applicant states that with regards to electromagnetic induction, the crossing point will be at 90 degrees. So we have to ask, why did they provide their information on 45 degree crossing angle? The level of conservatism in modelling the crossing point designed is flawed, and we ask again for the applicant to place into the public consultation the theoretical figures for high voltage DC from Norfolk Vanguard above and below any high voltage AC cables for the Hornsey Project 3. Alternatively, the applicant should be forced to utilise high voltage DC, which would be less damage to the environment as a whole and remove the EMF problem completely. We also ask that the applicant utilises the available resource from the National Grid website for the EMF Biological Research Trust to establish the facts from the fiction which they have placed on record. Question B in their response was, would there be any significant effects on people or the environment? The applicant's answer was no, see above. Therefore, the applicant has only related the question to the issue of EMFs. In our oral representation, we clearly pointed out that we felt there was an issue with heating, etc., etc. In our submission, we asked what would be the effects on the environment for heating, ecology, subsurface watercourse, and we contest that there will be heating effect by the significant number of high-voltage cables at the crossing point. The applicant has not answered the question, as they have no idea what the temperatures of their cables will be or the orientation above or below those of Norfolk Vanguard and Boreas. In fact, as far as heating goes, they try and defy the laws of physics, saying that there will not be effect from the cables below affecting the cables above. Therefore, we ask specific questions.
Can I just, sorry, again, we've got the 5 minute timing issue. How much more have you got to?
I've just got one side of A4. The questions are specific because they've not been answered.
Yeah, no, sorry for interrupting. I just want to be sort of fair to all parties that you're aware of that. So, and you can, of course, you submit your submission by the 1st of April.
I think it's important for people to hear some of the questions. Specific question, what temperature does the applicant expect the Hornsey 3 cables to reach when buried at 1.2 metres? What is the maximum depth of the cables that can be buried for heat dissipation? For heat dissipation, what is the required separation between cables horizontally and vertically? Question C, in this scenario, would any effects vary depending on which system was above the other? The applicant answered no. The magnetic fields can be treated separately where different transmission technologies are concerned. Norfolk Vanguard's answer to the same question was, EMFs at ground level will be largely dictated by the upper set of cables. Therefore, the applicant has a different answer. Who do we believe? We assert the temperature at the surface will very much be dependent on which cables are buried deepest, the upper cables being further heated from the cables below. The final question, which was incorrectly answered, what is the maximum burial depth likely to be required to achieve an adequate separation between the two cables? The applicant answered, the burial depth is not defined by EMF. And again, we'll link that. I can skip this now. We'll link that back to the temperature. There are some fact sheets. There's a fact sheet from National Grid entitled High Voltage Direct Current Electricity Technical Information, which clearly states that there is a minimum separation distance between adjacent cables. Therefore, the Norfolk Vanguard cables are definitely going to be high voltage DC if they're approved. So what spacing will Hornsea 3's cables be, either above or below? The question is specific, and we are aware that there is a maximum depth to high voltage cables to which they can be buried. I have a letter to Norman Lamb discussing...
Sorry for interrupting again, but again, to be sort of fair, how much more have you got to...
Just that and that little bit there.
OK, if you can quite summarise as much as possible, because you can submit the whole written submission by the deadline, so...
I will do.
I feel bad at cutting you off, but I want to make sure that everyone has a fair chance to have...
OK, we'll challenge then that this applicant is stretching the Rochdale envelope beyond what would be reasonable in its responses and its worst-case maximum design... and finally, land acquisition. As the land for the crossing point is subject to temporary acquisition, and there's two companies working on the land, who has responsibility for it? Traffic management, there is no coordinated traffic management plan between the two companies whatsoever. And my final bugbear is National Grid. If I could just state, National Grid has a statutory obligation under the Electricity Act 1989 to develop and maintain an efficient, coordinated and economical system of electricity transmission and to facilitate competition in the supply area. National Grid also has a statutory obligation to have regard to the preservation of amenity in developing the transmission system. I put it to the panel that National Grid has not had any due regard to the amenity of rural Norfolk in developing this transmission system. And I would ask that a caveat be placed on there, any consent to explore alternative options in exploiting an offshore extension to the national grid, which we've already provided information on as the offshore ring main. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pearce. And next on my list is Mr. Marks, please, from Causton.
Thank you. I've sent you two letters before about my business, but it's not about my business that I'm here to talk about tonight. I've been sitting at home thinking quite long and hard about this, and I'm concerned about the lack of infrastructure thinking that's been done by the main people, companies involved, and maybe also our government. We've had a northern bypass built recently, but yet you still decide to use a B road, that was started 800-900 years ago. We have potholes, we have lack of tarmac, we have narrow paths, but yet a B road is what I've been told by Hornsea 3 and the highways that it's fine to use. Well, I'm afraid I disagree. And the reason I disagree is, why spend millions of pounds on a northern distributor route, and which could easily be used and then bring it up a proper A road that is maintained regularly, and then have these depots off of the A roads. That to me makes sense. That to me is infrastructure. That to me is forward thinking. I live and work on the same road, Causton High Street. That is my world. That is my livelihood, and that is my place where I bring my children up. Not just my children are there, but my children for my sons to play with. The paths are very small, and the cars come through and lorries come through. But you're now talking about too many vehicles, and so now I have to get personal and I have to stand up and be heard. So please listen to what we are saying to you tonight and what we have been saying for the last month, and please use the roads that have been built for this type of structure, which is the Northern Distributor and A roads, not a small B road. Thank you all very much for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Next, Mr. Peck, please.
Thank you. My name's Greg Peck. I'm the county councillor and county councillor for Reefham Division, also the district councillor for Eynsford Ward, which includes, in both of those districts, Causton, Saul and Reefham. Obviously, my constituencies are probably the most impacted by this, both these projects, because they cross in my constituency. I don't want to repeat what other people have said. As you said, that's not appropriate. But I think the depots need to be, and the last speaker alluded to this, are in the wrong. The depots are in the wrong place. If you look at the judgment that was made when the anaerobic digester was turned down on the airfield, it was turned down because Highway said that the entrance road was inappropriate, that there would be too many large traffic movements backing up all the time. And you only have to look at this. This project would be much more impactful than those, far more vehicles. I went on the inspection with, I think, some of the members of the inspectorate up there, through Causton, through up to the Marriott's Way and back through Saul. And you can see through, when we walked through Causton, I hope you saw anyway, because I thought anybody who saw what I saw could not possibly agree that that was an appropriate route for traffic. Cars were backing up, a bus came round, had to back up. Lorries, I mean, it's a very, very narrow pinch point there. And I would hope that you can take that into consideration. Again, I don't want to labour a lot of the points that are already made. Mr. Pearce was talking about this is something I talked about to both companies over a year ago. They don't talk to each other. They should have been talking to each other. And I think we did try to get them in a room once together with all the MPs, and somebody, I can't remember which of the companies, dropped out, but it didn't come off. That was a year ago. Secondly, I think the whole consultation is flawed. I think that both of these companies are doing a tick box exercise, just so that they can show you how many parish councillors they've been to, how many councillors they've met, how many MPs they've met. And in every one of the meetings I've been to, we've told them what we want to discuss. When they come back, they haven't got any answers and they have to go away again. And I'm still not sure the total traffic movements. I mean, I've got a figure of 250 a day. A gentleman over there saying it's much worse. And I believe a lot will depend on the size of the trucks. I've heard that when one of the companies, I don't know if it was Orsted or Vettenfall, were challenged on the S bend as you go around Saul by the substation there, they said, well, you'll never get the trucks around there, too long. Okay, well, half the size of the trucks. Well, that immediately doubles the number of truck movements. So, I mean, the numbers are all over the place. I still haven't got a figure. So I think, all in all, I think that you need to take this into consideration in your deliberations, and I hope you will. And I think, other than repeat what a lot of other people have said, which you don't want me to do, I think there's been some very good arguments made tonight, and I hope there'll be some more. Thank you.
Thank you. And next, Mrs. Waterson, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Imogen Waterson. I'm actually Dr. Imogen Waterson. I'm chairman of the Corpestine Saxthorpe Parish Council and a resident of Saxthorpe, immediately impacted by one of the roads that is going up to the substation at Little Barningham. I'd like to know what improvements are going to be suggested to allow these lorries to come through Saxthorpe and up to the site. At the moment, we are doing a traffic survey in the village, and we have records of vehicles travelling at 90 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour zone. If we have these cars and the number of heavy vehicles, which Professor Barnett was talking about, I think we're asking for trouble. It would seem to me to be an awful lot better if a new road could be constructed up from the bypass up to the site where these substation is going to be built. It would get round this problem immediately. If not, there are a whole lot of children who live on the far side of the road where the lorries will pass, who need to cross that road to come down to the school each morning. What are you proposing to do to ameliorate this major difficulty? My second question is very brief. I have read so many different timings for exactly how long this disruption is going on for. I would like a clear answer. Is it 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, or 10 years? I've had written, I've seen all these written about. And my third question is very brief. The trench which is being dug for the cabling, I understand, may lie open for 10 years. Is this correct or not? Thank you.
Thank you. And obviously, there'll be an opportunity for the applicant to respond to your questions that you've raised. Could I just check one quick question for you? Are you actually representing, are your views on behalf of the parish council?
Yes.
That they are, rather than your own views for the parish council. Thank you. And you also mentioned a school. What was the name of the, what is the name of the school? Sorry.
It's Corpestine Primary School.
Right.
Can I add that I was representing the parish council as well?
Yes.
Right, yeah. Yes. So you're both representing the parish council. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you. Next, Mr. Sears from... Mr. Searson. Thank you.
Hello. Yeah, Clive Searson, the old railway gatehouse. I'd just like to draw the panel's attention. You've been to our property. It's not for everyone, but it was something very, very special to us. We bought it for the isolation, my ability to work from home and walk dogs. It's not everybody's dream, but it is ours. This scheme completely devastates our way of life. I'm seriously concerned for, one, our physical safety, but more importantly, for our mental state. We've been given no assurances as to the number of vehicles. Once again, I'll highlight big lorries, small lorries, cables coming in at night, maybe not, maybe on a small lorry. We might bring the ballast or whatever in and pick it up with a shovel to keep you awake. We might not. There seems there's just no certainty about anything we're being told at all. And I just need to bring the panel's attention to that. The other thing that they've done is the modelling of the traffic down our road, which... well, it's just physically impossible. There's parts in that modelling that are just physically impossible. I don't know how they generate them. All I know is that the information is misleading and wrong. And I think you need to be fully aware of that. This would have a massive, devastating effect on our life. And I can't emphasise that enough. Every single one of those vehicles goes past our house, 2 yards in front of our window. How can that not be affecting you? Apparently, this has no detrimental effect on the value of our property either. So I've been told. And the other joyful thing that I've been told is, even though they bring the cable drums in at night, which will disturb your sleep, you're not likely to get any sleep because we're going to email you and forewarn you, so you're not relaxed enough to go to sleep in the first place. None of this is satisfactory. We're being fobbed off, and they say they're listening. Every single one of them says something different. We were told, when I was here at the last meeting, you mentioned there'd been an offer made to us. I said that had not been made. As soon as we broke, two of them came to see me regarding the offer, and an offer has actually got to us today about 3-4 hours ago, which was... It doesn't warrant mentioning, but it took until 3 or 4 hours ago for that to come through. It's not satisfactory. We can't be bought off. We didn't buy that. We bought it for a reason, and this just takes all of that away. As long as the panel is aware of that, you've been to the property, you understand. I know you do. That's about all I've got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Searson. And next, Julie Holland, please.
Hello. Hello? Okay, I'm Judy Holland. Okay?
Judy Holland, yeah. My apologies.
Okay, I'm a resident in Reefham. I live on the Causton Road, and I am probably the closest house to the crossing point of the cables, and with the Vattenfall and the Orsted cabling, I've got them both running in both all directions around my house, basically. I've no objections to onshore wind farms. We need more supplies. However, what I'm looking for is written reassurance from the wind farm developers that our welfare, that's my partner and myself, will not be affected in any way, shape or form with the laying of these cables, in particular on the crossing point, and especially if we've got a mix of AC/DC cables. That's it.
Thank you. And now Susan Matter from Alton Parish Council, please.
Good evening. If I could just read a short statement, it's about cumulative impact. In the last few weeks, Alton Parish Council has read documents relating to cumulative impact. These were submitted by Orsted and Vattenfall. In these documents, both projects had sought to justify that on roads where there would be cumulative traffic, it would not be detrimental to residents in terms of route sensitivity, noise and vibration, and that those roads could cope with the impact of greater volumes of traffic, especially HGVs. OPC was shocked to find on reading the cumulative traffic reports that although the same methodology and traffic data has apparently been used for each report, baseline traffic data 2022, the outcomes appear to be very different. There were differing percentage increases in all traffic numbers and especially for HGVs. In Orsted's cumulative impact assessment for Alton, there was a 548% increase in HGVs, according to Appendix 28, and a 594% increase for the same link in an earlier Appendix 25, so some confusion as to what the actual increase is. Vattenfall's CIA for Alton was 487.2% increase, so huge variations using the same data. It should be noted that all outcomes would fall within the IEMA guidelines, showing that a greater than 30% increase in traffic needed further assessment. Incidentally, Link 208 appears not to have been assessed for air quality, which is surprising considering the increase in HGVs using that route and given the close proximity to the road of one property. Rather surprisingly then, given the percentage increase for Link 208, the street, was a noise assessment carried out by Orsted at one property, where the outcome was moderate adverse. but with proposed road intervention mitigations, regrading the road, reducing the speed limit to 30 miles an hour, the result was reduced to minor. I think residents find it hard to understand how an obvious increase in traffic numbers generated by both of these projects on previously quiet rural roads, how the outcome for noise or route sensitivities can be minor or negligible. The more cynical amongst us would think that this is a result of statistical smoothing. Alton has recently learnt on reading Austed's latest outline construction traffic management plan that although there will be no abnormal load deliveries at night to the cable corridor from the main construction compound, they haven't excluded abnormal load deliveries to the compound at night from the port. This makes a complete nonsense of the core working hours. OPC therefore can only conclude that the main construction compound will be operating 24 hours a day, bringing with it the potential for nighttime noise and light pollution from those deliveries. This will have implications for Alton residents and for all of those living along the cable delivery route from the port, wherever that might be. Both projects have in their CIA documents produced a map of roads in Norfolk that would be impacted by cumulative traffic. And it is a stark reminder to Norfolk residents and businesses how this might impact their lives for several years. Many of the major routes in Norfolk will experience delays and increased traffic. This includes the tourist routes on the A148 and the A140 between the cable route landfall areas of Haysborough and Weybourne. This will also impact Cromer. Further inland, at the cable corridor crossover points, the impact will mean possible diversions, as roads are closed at sections while trenching and ducting is carried out, especially as Vattenfall does not intend to use trenchless crossings at these roads. While the two projects will no doubt arrange how they can manage to work in the same areas, for local businesses, especially for Norfolk farms, there would be the need for careful planning, especially for those crops where time-related harvesting is crucial. For example, the pea harvest, which needs to be picked and arrived at processing plants in hours, not held up by abnormal indivisible loads along its route. The issues of agricultural traffic on the same roads and the increase in HGVs from these projects has been underestimated. In this final phase of the examination process, many residents must feel that their lives really do not matter when assessments and mitigations seemingly can be steered in favour of a beneficial outcome to the developer. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Nicola Bannum, please.
I live on the High Street and I run a small bed and breakfast. Is that on? Yeah. Which would be absolutely devastated should this go ahead. People come to Causton because they like the peace and quiet. With this much traffic going through up to 11 o'clock at night, is what I read somewhere, that would completely destroy everything. So that's the end of that. My house is a grade 2-star listed building because of the internal features. We have a very large cellar, which is already unstable, and when we get lots of farm traffic coming through, say at sugar beet time or pea harvesting, the house already shakes, and I fear that it will cause a lot of damage. As to also to a lot of houses along the High Street, most of my other points have been made probably a lot more eloquently than I can, but I'm very concerned about pollution from the diesel traffic going through. Children walking to the park and recreation area, which is where, in some places, the footpath is so narrow you can't push a pushchair along there, or a wheelchair, definitely not. So already they have to go out into the road. I just can't see how this can be viable at all It would completely destroy our quality of life, destroy many businesses, put our health at risk, and especially our children.
Thank you for that representation. Next is Councillor Acheron, please.
Thank you. So I've got a written submission here, and just to give you a flavour of what's in it, I urge the examining authority to recommend that if consent's given to this project, it should be solely using HVDC transmission. I make the case for why inside. Furthermore, failing this, that the required mitigations of the HVAC booster station should be seriously increased, well beyond that which the applicant has put forward already. In particular, and it's not been mentioned yet, in connection with the booster station in respect of noise and vibration. And again, I make the case in the submission. I'm here trying to make my representation for the second time, and the examining authority has still not allowed me to become an interested party, despite me being an elected representative of over 7,000 people, roughly 25% of whom would be deemed interested parties definitively. My earlier representation, which I attempted to make after the last public hearing, was made on behalf of over 100 local people, several other elected councillors, all six parish councils in my division that are affected, and the Member of Parliament, who is a co-signatory of myself. And it was rejected on a technicality. And that technicality was because it was written before the application was submitted. Now, that's sort of the point, because what people who speak to me have said is that they feel virtually nothing has changed. So hundreds took part in the public consultation run by the applicant, and yet people are angry and they feel misled. There are dozens of people engaged full-time on the applicant's side in this. What about us? Do we rely upon our local unpaid parish councillors' significant professional academic experiences? Do we rely upon my attempts? Well, I've not managed to get the system right. God help anyone who's busy doing other things. We don't stand a chance, and much more effort needs to be made to bring in the views of those affected. In this, as in so many matters of national government, we normal people do not understand how it is possible for such little long-term thinking to be being applied. And I stress this in an attempt to be absolutely certain that this second attempt at representation is accepted. There are a lot of people who don't see why Vattenfall can agree to DC, but Ørsted cannot. And likewise, why Vattenfall can enter into open negotiation on the possibility of providing dark fibre, that is, infrastructure capable of providing hundreds of gigabits of internet connectivity to every property along the route, but Ørsted months ago refused to take their discussions any further. And talking of the discussion further, serious issues were raised at the last open floor hearing, but still, at least as of Friday, no recording is available of the meeting. How on earth are local people supposed to know what's being done to them? I took legal advice after that meeting, and I'm pleased that this additional hearing has been arranged. But it still leaves me with one question, and I seek answers to this from both the examining authority and the applicant. Why does nobody seem genuinely interested in taking our views on board beyond that which is required by law? Thank you.
Thank you. And can I just clarify, as I have done with other councillors, etc., just your who you are representing in terms of, because you mentioned various different parish councils.
Well, I'm the elected member for Melton Constable Division, so I'm representing my county council division.
Right, thank you. And the next representation, please, from... excuse me, I'm trying to read my writing. Amelia... Was it Amelia Whiting? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Amelia Whiting. I live in the old schoolhouse with my family with three children. Our property runs directly along the B1145. At the end of our property, there's a pinch point. So all the traffic gets backed up along the road, leaving HGVs idling there outside our property. So I'm very concerned about the level of pollution this will cause. Not only that, our windows look out over the B1145. This isn't an issue with cars, but HGVs, the drivers can look directly into our house, which again raises safeguarding issues for my children. Do I have to live with my blinds down for 5 years, 10 years, however long this lasts? So, talking about children, our village, there are not safe paths along B145. So I've raised very serious concerns for the safety of children in our village. And I'd like to just look at the personal impact that this project is going to have. Thank you.
Thank you. And next, also from Causton, I think, Polly Bockis, please.
Hello. I want to reiterate everything everybody else has said. We're also a listed property with a cellar directly against the road. I think nobody has as yet taken consideration the fact that we are listed properties. We're not modern buildings built with standard structures. Therefore, the impact of vibrations and noise, etc., is very different. Our windows, the gaps around them, it's all, you know, all that needs taken into consideration. We were one of the properties that had noise and vibration monitors put outside, and we would like to know, has the data that we've now seen this last week, has it been reviewed by the Environmental Health Officer for the council? We're obviously lay people, so for us to try and work our way through this data is quite difficult, but we've done the best we can. We would like to know if the calibration certificates were seen by a third party, and if a third party had actually witnessed where elements went. From what we are led to believe, the microphone placed outside of our building could possibly be too close to the wall, which would falsify the figures. It would mean that the standard current noise is higher because it's bouncing back from that wall. Therefore, it means then when they're projecting what they think the flow will be later, that higher rate now to what is projected later gives a completely false figure. Can we also ask somebody to explain to us, they are saying that for ourselves we'd get a 3.5 decibel increase in noise. That is significant. It's not a tiny amount. Further down the high street, they've said 3.7. This is because they are within a corridor, a channel, directly behind us. It opens out to the widest point for the marketplace. The readings are taken on an LEQ level, which is an... I don't know how to explain this, an average, I can only do by hands. Basically, they've taken the movements over 18 hours and averaged them out. When it's averaged out over that, it's great. When you look at the peaks are very close together and an awful lot higher. It's the peak noises that actually affect somebody. Can you actually equate LEQ and compare it to DBRM, which I understand is the peak flow? So when you actually look at when they come and come around and hit us, we're all going to have lots of very high-pitched noises. It's those high-pitched, interrupted noises that affect people. Sorry. Bear with me while I turn pages. Thank you. In terms of noise, we have also been explained that HGVs could be relegated down to be low loaders because they've got to mitigate the size of the cable drums going down to smaller cable drums, they then go into low loaders. A low loader has a smaller, harder, rigid tyre on a lower base. It therefore creates more noise. If it goes across a road with a pothole, it creates more vibrations. And it's the whole surface of the road and the specific size and weight of a truck and what is actually being loaded on that truck, which will make an effect. Have all these things been taken into consideration with those proposed figures that have come out to us? We also don't know, with the Vanguard and the Orsted, the cumulative numbers. For us, vibration is a huge issue because of having a cellar. Our cellar is directly on the corner of the road. And the easiest way it was explained to me as a layperson is if you think of water torture and water dripping on a rock, that water then flings up at a 45-degree angle. It's the 45-degree, which is the energy, so the wave for where it dissipates to. But if water drips continually on a rock, it eventually makes a hole. What we're trying to say is one truck going past may make a tiny vibration. 400, 500 in a day at the same point is going to do an awful lot more impact. We are also on the pinch point of the other side of Causton High Street. And we were told... that the movements were going to be between 7 and 11, and very kindly the councillors pointed out that there are, within Norfolk County Council, they actually have 7:30 to 9 o'clock, no HGVs, and I understand Orsted are going to agree to that. However, in the noise and vibration assessment, they actually mention the WHO reports. The World Health Organization reports actually say that it's still night. Night period finishes at 7 a.m. in the morning. Orsted's working hours are going to be from 7 till, I think, 7, but they have an hour's mobilization before that period, which means it's 6 in the morning. World Health Organization classifies that time as night, and they state that if a 95 decibel event is heard in a bedroom before 7 in the morning, it will disturb sleep. Based on this, a single lorry of any type, whether it's HGV or a normal single one, going through at 6 or before 7 can breach that regulation. That's not in there. We want some assurance that we are actually going to be able to sleep, that we are allowed to actually have some human time. What is actually going to be in the mobilisation period? Who actually moves? Is it just construction traffic? Is it people getting to work? Is it small load lorries? It doesn't say any of that. When it gets to mitigation points towards the end of their report, there's a huge section which states that the 6.2, the applicant is considering mitigation. Has anything been done? What is actually going to be done? Is that fixing the road? Is that giving people fences? Is that changing sizes of lorries? Then at 6.3, they state that Vanguard and Orsted will have combined traffic thresholds. Is there anything in writing? Is there anything agreed? Is there actually a combined traffic threshold yet? Does anybody know it? And we'd also like to know how that would be monitored. And it does say, in the case of an exceedance of the threshold found during operation, mitigation of the combined works would be solved. But how and who's monitoring that? And, you know, how would we know? If suddenly we find out we've got half a dozen HGVs going through overnight, who do we ring? Who stops it? How long will it take? Ladies have mentioned the state of our pavements and our roads, but can I just say that since we've been there, small works to the roads have been done and have been fixed. Drop drains definitely re-drop again within a few months. If you're going to try and make Causton a one-way through road, any impact for road works, somebody stopping with an oil lorry, the postman, anything like that will stop traffic completely. We're already stuck. Please just reconsider.
Thank you. And next, Mr. Whiteley, please.
Hi, I'm also a Causton High Street resident and also a Grade 2 listed property owner. I just wondered if there's been any opinions sought from professional structured surveyors as to the impact of the vibrations on our properties, to the points already made around the fact that, you know, the foundations of these properties. I think my property ranges from 1790. So what analysis has been undertaken by a structural surveyor as to the impact that the vibrations from the lorry is going to cause? And again, to you know, a lot of people's points here, I'd also like to understand what analysis has been undertaken for the sort of mental well-being disruption that this project is going to have. There's been a lot of assessments on the physical impact and the viability of the size of the road, etc. But I can't seem to find any analysis from a mental health well-being perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mrs. Whiteley?
Hi, yes, I'm a Causton resident and we live on the High Street. I mean, I'm still absolutely shocked that Causton is still being considered as an appropriate route for the volumes. I mean, we're being told that the road is suitable for HGV. Well, it might be suitable if the village is completely empty. But we live in a thriving village with lots of young families, elderly people. We have a busy shop, a busy pub. We have tourists. We have a lot of agricultural traffic. So once you add all those HGVs to that, it is not suitable. We have a young family. We have a 4- and a 7-year-old. And, I mean, I would welcome somebody to walk around the village with me and tell me that these paths are that they are going to be safe and that these paths are suitable. They don't have a sense of danger. They're not walking around with a clipboard and a high-vis jacket. You know, these are a tiny little pavements. And I just have serious concerns about all of our safety. And I mean, there are alternative routes being suggested. And I think we've been told that there would be damage to hedgerows. You know, the last thing I want is more damage to the environment. But I think a hedge, sadly, has got a better chance of surviving if it's clipped by a HGV than we have. So thank you.
Thank you. And next, please. I'm not sure if it's a Mr. or Mrs. Williams. Next.
Hello. Yeah, I live in Causton on Chapel Street. And my, well, obviously lots of issues here. But I'm also wondering about for the children. Like, we chose Causton to bring our children up because it's such a beautiful village. And it's idyllic. It's not on a motorway, etc. And now it seems like it's going to become like a motorway. And our son especially likes cycling. And I would feel quite worried about him cycling on the roads if there's so many lorries going through. I already worry at times because of the winery. But with that sheer volume, I wouldn't really want him going out like that. I definitely wouldn't want my daughter cycling anymore. So I think that will more or less stop that. So it's sort of affecting, well, in my family, it will affect two children and the whole village. Lots of children cycle out and about, adults. Yeah, kill you.
Thank you. And next, and last on my list, is Mr. Pitcher, please.
Hello, I'm a resident of Causton as well. Given the increased volume of traffic and the disruption to Causton are likely to be colossal, I'm amazed that the applicant has made no direct contact with the residents of Causton, especially those on the High Street, to discuss the impact of the project. And my question is, I ask the applicant to justify this silence.
Thank you. That's the list of all the speakers that I have before me until I before I come back to the applicant. Is there anybody that I've missed who wishes to speak? No. No, thank you. And thank you for all those very useful representations. If I can now turn to the applicant, please, if you'd like to briefly respond to what's been said today, please. And again, if you can give your, I know you gave your names before, but if you can give your names before speaking, please, for the recording. Thank you.
Claire Broderick for the applicant. I think it would be helpful if we perhaps address some of the non-traffic and Causton-related comments first, and then we can move on to the various comments that have been raised in relation to Causton and Alton. A number of the points we have already addressed in our written representation, so I'm just going to highlight a few of, respond to a few of the comments that were made. In relation to some of the comments made by Mr. Barnett, I think that we would like to make it clear that the applicant did carry out a full and proper environmental impact assessment that accompanied the application. The methodology and the conclusions have been agreed with the local authorities and various statutory stakeholders. And we would highlight that no concerns were raised by Public Health England. In relation to the points made in regarding the crossing with the Norfolk Vanguard cables, as was referred to, we submitted a representation at deadline one setting out the EMI assessment, which confirmed that it would be compliant with the UK exposure limits, regardless of whether it was AC or DC, and which the locations of those cables. In relation to the points raised regarding the choice of HVDC over HVAC, we've already set out in quite a lot of detail and discussed other hearings the reasons why the applicant requires HVAC within its application, and we would refer to Appendix 22 of our Deadline 1 submission, which contained a briefing note setting out the detailed reasons why the applicant is seeking consent for both an HVAC and an HVDC transmission system. Moving on to traffic-related matters, I think it would be useful if Mr. Zanna can just clarify some of the figures that have been discussed today, because there does seem to be some confusion over the maximum daily figures being quoted. And then Mr. Lacker will give an update on the process of the CTMP and the discussions that have taken place with Norfolk County Council since the last deadline, just so that everybody is aware of the current status regarding the intervention scheme at Causton. A lot of the comments that have been raised today were raised in written submissions at deadline 7, and the applicant has responded to these in detail at deadline 8, and I know that those responses were only made available today on the PINS website.
Sorry, could everyone obviously give the applicant a chance to speak? I want to make sure that everybody has a chance to speak tonight so the panel can hear what is being said. So can you please refrain from commenting or otherwise on what's been said, so we have a chance to hear everybody, please.
So Claire Brodick for the applicant. Just to reiterate, so in accordance with the examination timetable, the deadline for commenting on deadline 7 submissions was at deadline 8, and I believe they've now been made available by PINS on the PINS website today. So I would refer those here to that written submission, which answers the majority of the comments that have been raised today.
So, Paul Zanna from Create. I'll just clarify the position of traffic flows predicted to go through Causton, if I may. The total predicted flow for Hornsey 3 is a total daily flow of 370 vehicles, of which 127 would be HGVs, and a total cumulative flow with Norfolk, Vanguard and Hornsey 3 has 668 total flows, of which 271 are HGVs.
Thank you. Any further comments from the applicant?
Paul Zanna from Create. Just to clarify, that's two-wave movements. That's total flows in and out of those particular areas.
Thank you.
Sarah Drilaka for the applicant. There's been some mention, obviously, of a revision 5 of the Causton intervention scheme. Just to provide an update, so at Appendix 27, at deadline 7, the applicant provided a document that set out basically the development of the Causton intervention scheme and provided at that point in time the current proposals and how they had sought to respond to feedback where possible. Since deadline 7, the applicants met with Norfolk County Council to discuss this scheme, as well as in separate discussions with Broadland District Council's Environmental Health Officer. Feedback was provided by Norfolk County Council on the scheme presented in Appendix 27, and the applicant has updated the scheme in response to this feedback. The outcome of that is revision 5 of the Corston Intervention Scheme. That's been provided to Norfolk County Council, who has now agreed in principle from a highway perspective that that scheme is acceptable. It has also been shared with Broadland District Council Environmental Health Officer for their comments, as well as Corston Parish Council. It's the applicant's intention to include that revision 5 within the outlined CTMP to be submitted at deadline 9 tomorrow.
Claire Broderick for the applicant. I think it's just worth reiterating that the applicant has listened to the concerns being raised and we have sought to respond to them, but we would just draw the examining authority's attention to the conclusions of the cumulative impact assessment submitted at deadline 7, that's appendix 28, and the conclusions of the environmental statement, and the conclusions of that are that with mitigation in place, the effects would be negligible, adverse, and therefore not significant.
Thank you. Does that complete the applicant's representations tonight?
Sorry, one further point. Sarah Dralaka from the applicant. There was a mention regarding the cumulative thresholds with Norfolk Vanguard. Those have been agreed through ongoing engagement with Norfolk Vanguard at every level within the Hornsey 3 project. And again, those would be included within the outline CTMP to be submitted at deadline 9 tomorrow.
Thank you. Does that complete the applicant's comments now? Thank you. Just a point of note, really, on there's been one or two representations made about interested parties and non-interested parties and the distinction between the two. In terms of how the panel has to deal with interested parties and non-interested parties, it's really out of the panel's control in terms of the statutory instruments for defining what is an interested party. But I know that the applicant has, I know there's been one representation that's been mentioned that hasn't been accepted, but I know that the panel has accepted a lot of non-interested party representations from residents in Corston, really, but we are governed by the procedures that we have to operate within. As I indicated earlier, there is a deadline of Monday, the 1st of April, for the receipt of written submissions of all representations that have been made at this hearing. The examination is scheduled to be completed by the 2nd. Of April 2019, after which the panel has 3 months to prepare a report and recommendation for consideration by the Secretary of State, who will be the final decision maker. And I should reiterate that any written representation submitted after the 2nd of April will not be seen by the panel. I'd finally like to thank everyone for their attendance and for the very useful and helpful representations that have been made tonight, all of which will be carefully considered by the panel in its examination and recommendation. The hearing is now closed. Thank you.